All right, Alexander, Putin has announced that the Victory Day, 75th anniversary of the World War II, the Great Patriotic War, has been postponed. Hasn't been canceled. I don't think he said it's been canceled. He says it's going to be postponed. Yeah. But it's an important one because it is the 75th anniversary of the Day in Pobeda. And this comes on the heels of another record breaking day for CV cases. Today is Thursday.
That's right.
And we had 3,448 cases in Russia, the fifth consecutive record breaking day. Every day over 5 days.
Yes.
They've been breaking records. The interesting part about this is while the cases are soaring, the death rate remains very, very low. It's a good thing. It remains very, very low.
Yes.
And it reminds me of Germany in a way. So what do you make of what's happening in Russia? And maybe if there is some sort of comparison to Germany?
Yes. Right. Let's talk about, first of all, the victory parade postponement. I mean, that is going to be a very difficult decision. Well, it's not a difficult decision. It's the obvious decision. But it is a sign of how serious the situation is, because that is a major day in the national calendar. Obviously, having to postpone it like this is something that's unwelcome. But given the realities, I don't think there was any choice. And yesterday, various veterans associations in Russia said that it should be postponed. And when I saw that, I said to myself, this is clearly being preparing the ground to postpone it. It's going to be difficult blow for them, because apparently they were going to showcase a large number of new weapon systems that were coming along, T-90 tanks, T-14 tanks, and all kinds of things that were coming, and there were going to be flypasts of new fighter jets and all those sort of things. But there isn't just that. I mean, there's a big emotional traction for Russians involved in these parades. But having said that, I mean, it was the absolutely correct decision. It had to be done. You can't have thousands of people gathering together in a single place when you have a pandemic of this kind raging. Now, the figures in Russia. A couple of weeks ago, the Russians, I think, were hoping that they'd been able to limit the spread of the disease, of the infection, to Moscow. They closed their borders with China very early. They were trying to keep track of people who were coming into Russia from Europe. And of course, they were hoping that it wouldn't spread to the general population. Well, it's quite clear now that it has spread. And as you rightly said, they have a rising curve. But I still think on balance that they've kept the whole thing under control. And the reason they've done that is because they've actually put in place some pretty, clear policies. I mean, obviously, there's the lockdown in Moscow and in a number of other places, but they're testing on a massive scale. I think they're number two in the world after the United States. So they're testing on a huge scale. They're keeping track of asymptomatic cases. So they're able to find out people who are infected, but who are not ill. And around 40% of the people that they are, that are counting in their statistics are these asymptomatic cases. That's not true in Britain, for example. In Britain, well, you're not certain to be tested even if you are ill, but basically you have to be ill to be tested. So just for the sake of comparison, Russia is testing at a rate of 100,000 tests a day, and it's clocking up. Britain is struggling to do 15,000 a day. It's a huge difference, even allowing for the larger Russian population. So they're able to keep track of cases much more. They are able. The other thing that they're doing is, the moment they find that you're infected, they keep track on you, obviously. If you show the slightest signs of illness, they're putting you in hospital. And apparently something like 70% of cases are instantly hospitalized. Again, the contrast with Britain is stark, because in Britain you have to be seriously ill to be hospitalized. In Russia, pretty much everybody who's ill is hospitalized. And they keep people who are mildly ill, whatever that means, but anyway, not very ill, in separate hospitals from people who are seriously ill. And what it seems has been found is that if you treat people when you know who are still only mildly ill, if you're able to treat them by giving them, you know, oxygen supplies early and providing them with proper treatment at that stage, you know, up to the extent that we can do, the chances of recovery become much higher. And that's why death rates in Russia are still very, very low, and recovery rates are very, very high. And that seems to be much the same model that Germany has followed. So in Germany, they also test on a massive scale. They identify asymptomatic cases. They are treating people who are mild cases as well. And the result is a low death rate. So they have it sort of under control. It's not, they haven't dodged the bullet as I think they thought they would, but they're still keeping more on top of the situation than other European countries are. And I get to say something else. It's true that they're on a rising curve, but it's not the vertiginous rise that you get in some countries. Cases are growing at around 14% to 16% a day, whereas in the height of the sort of Italian, Spanish, British crisis, apparently it was more like 20% a day. So, you know, the curve is rising, but it's not rising very fast by comparison with some other places. And there's even some people who think that they're actually quite close to the peak there, that they're getting an idea of where, of who's infected and who's not. They're able to track everybody who comes into contact with infected people. And the result is that some of the officials are hoping that around the weekend, they'll have hit their peak. One other thing the Russians doing, by the way, which I think is unique, I haven't heard anywhere else that they do it, is that private companies, the big private companies, are testing too. And apparently that's separate from the government testing. I'm not absolutely sure about this, but that's what I'm hearing. And they're finding out which of their employees are infected and which are not. And then they're able to put those employees who are not infected back to work, providing them with, at the same time, providing them with protective clothing. So the result is that factories up and down the country are now starting to reopen, even in the middle of a lockdown. So that's also different. I don't want to give the impression that all is well. They messed up disastrously. I'm talking about the Russians now. They messed up disastrously the introduction of a pass system for driving cars in Moscow. The pass system is not perhaps a bad idea, but they had armies of policemen going around enforcing it brutally. The result was that it caused massive traffic jams, which is a terrible thing because that's more likely to create infections. And it caused overcrowding in some metro stations, as people who weren't able to travel by car had to take the metro. And that, of course, is a breeding ground for infections. So let's give them an A minus, if you like, not an A plus, because they
didn't. I was going to say a B.
a B. But they're certainly doing better than some people are. It seems like that. It seems that way. So we'll see whether this debacle of the pass system in Moscow will delay them getting past the peak. But anyway, compared to Britain, where things are just totally disorganized, you know, they're doing okay. They're doing all right, I think.
Yeah, I think with Russia, I think everyone in the beginning thought that Russia had mitigated any type of risks with the virus, but it just took a little bit longer to ramp up in Russia. And I'm looking at the numbers as of today, the 16th, 27,938 cases, 232 deaths. And of those 28,000 cases, 16,146 are just in Moscow.
That's right. I mean, Moscow is the epicenter of this, because that's, of course, where all the people come from the outside world, and they travel through. And it's clear that, you know, the attempts to limit it just didn't work. Maybe it was an impossible thing. And it was illusory to think that they could restrict it to incoming travelers. But, you know, we'll see.
Everything always has to be put in perspective when we put out numbers like this. And this goes for every city and every country.
Absolutely.
Looking at 28,000 cases of a city with a population of anywhere from 15, some reports say 20 million.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's still a very small amount.
Absolutely.
Of CV cases. And a very, very small amount of deaths. I don't want to downplay the seriousness of what's going on, but it does seem that even the hardest hit city is not that hard hit.
That's right.
This carries over to, I don't know what the numbers are in Germany or Berlin or other countries where the death cases are very low, even though they do have a trend, or at least the trend has been that confirmed cases has been rising.
Yes,
I mean, consecutive days.
Indeed, I mean Germany is far worse than Russia. I mean, I think they've got something like 160,000 cases there, and I mean their death rate, their deaths are in the thousands, not as I said, in the hundreds, in the low hundreds as the Russian cases are. But the reason I think that happened was that the Germans got going much later in the curve than the Russians did. I mean, I will say one thing that the Russians did do was that they did, I mean, I said they did, I think, hope that they would dodge the bullet, but they prepared in case they didn't. I mean, they built a new hospital outside Moscow, which is specifically for intensive care cases, and it's entirely for people who have caught the infection. They organized themselves, and they've developed a very sensitive tests, apparently. So that's the difference between the Russians and the Germans, that the Russians delayed the introduction long enough to be much more prepared than other European countries were. And I'm going to say one other thing, which is because they're getting so many more cases. Remember what I said at the start of the program. Many of them are asymptomatic cases that are not being noted in other countries. So 29,000 cases in Moscow. If you compare that with, you know, the kind of people who get tested in Britain, you have to cut that by a third, because in Britain, asymptomatic cases are not detected in the way that they are in Russia. So that we're not all counting around the world people in the same way.
Yeah. And my final 2 cents on this is that I think Russia closed their border to China on the east very quickly, which was a smart move. There's no doubt about it. Closing your borders should have been the first thing that every country undertook. Russia did it. And when you look at the way the infections are spread out, you can definitely see that if the infections first hit Europe via Italy, then you could see that most of the cases that eventually moved east towards Russia are definitely going in the direction of Moscow and St. Petersburg.
That's right.
And much of the eastern part of the country, from Vladivostok and down towards the east, where they did close off the border, has a scattered amount of cases. Exactly. So closing that border on the Eastern Front with China
made a very big difference. There are lots of Russians, you see, who go to Italy. It's a very favorite place for Russians. A lot of people got infected there. And I saw the mayor of Moscow, who's a very capable man, Mr. Sobyanin, and he made a rather tart comment about rich Russians going to Courchevel in the Alps in February to ski. And of course, they came back and they brought the virus with them. So that's one of the things that happens.
All right. Alexander Mercurs, Editor-in-Chief of The Duran, thank you very much. Guys, if you like this video, click on the subscribe button down below. Smash that like button as well. And also check us out on iTunes and SoundCloud for an audio copy of this video. And please donate to us on PayPal, Patreon, and Subscribestar. You will find the link to those platforms in the description box down below as well. And please go to the Duran shop and pick up some awesome merchandise. We've got magic mugs and polo shirts. And Alexander, also visit our friends at the Patriotic Legacy and pick up a Patriot Beacon flashlight, the best flashlight in the world, made in the USA, ships international all over the world. And they are running a promotion with us. When you use the code Duran20, you get 20% off when you make that purchase of the Patriot Beacon. And they are about to release, Alexander, the Patriot Beacon 3, which is going to come in a red color. That is awesome. And the promotion is that they will be giving away one Patriot Beacon 3 Red, which is a $99 value. That's awesome. One tactical pen, which is a $19.99 value. And one Monkey Fist Ball, which is a $4.95 value. It's all found on their website, which I have a link in the description box down below. So check it out. And to be valid for the giveaway, customers have to use that code Duran20 and their order value must be greater than $30. And that giveaway is going to be running all throughout the month. Use Duran20. The winner will be chosen at random and notified via email. And we'll even announce that winner, I think, on one of our shows as well. So awesome giveaways via our friends at Patriotic Legacy.
Absolutely. And can I just add to that what Alex said, that it's an international, it's international. Patriotic Legacy, our friends there, deliver to all countries. So you don't have to be just in the United States to participate. And Alex said that it's the best, well, he called it a flashlight. I would call it a torch because, you know, that's British English. It is the best torch ever. It's the best torch in the world. I say that without any hesitation at all. It is a wonderful torch. It is beautiful to handle. It's solid. It's strong. It's practically indestructible. In fact, I'm sure it is indestructible. It's also solar powered. So, you know, if you're carrying it around and you've forgotten to put in your batteries, well, you don't have to worry about batteries because it doesn't have any. It's, as I said, solar powered. It never exhausts power, provided you keep it in the light. It's obviously a very strong torch. In fact, by the way, when I was out walking my dogs with it recently, I mean, it was just amazing what huge distances it covers and how clearly you can see in the light that it provides. It's actually a beautiful, clear light, almost like daylight. It's just extraordinary. And as you can see, it also has different styles. It can also flash, which, if you're walking on a road, for example, a busy road, and you have it in your car, you have to get out of your car, it's also a good way of signaling where you are. But it is a wonderful, absolutely amazing torch. It's got a magnet, so if you want it in your car, you can sort of stick it onto a metal protrusion there. It's if you are in an accident, perish the thought, but it does happen. Well, you can smash through the windscreen. It's got the sort of function for that. You can also cut yourself out of your seatbelt if you have to do that 2. If you get lost, well, it's got a compass. By the way, I do get lost. I'm one of these people who gets lost quite easily, so it's incredibly useful to have a compass. And of course, I said it's solar powered. It's also got a port there, so you can actually recharge your laptop or your iPad or your phone. It's got that function too, and it's actually a really smart and elegant thing to hold. It is unequivocally the best torch ever. And it's got one final thing, which I'll do very briefly because it'll attract my dogs if I do it too much, which is that it's also got an alarm, which some of us might have just heard. So if you get lost and you know you're cut off from your partner, which I sometimes am, by the way, when I go walking with my wife, for example, I go this way and she goes that, I can do that and my wife will find me. And if my wife doesn't, my dogs certainly will. Because one of the things I use this torch for a lot is to walk my dogs at night. I mean, at these hard times when you don't want to be meeting up with too many people, having a torch as you take out your dogs at night is the best thing. It's an absolutely invaluable accessory. So, Patriot Beacon from our friends at Patriot Legacy. Alex told you about the event that so absolutely you will get an amazing torch. And if they're actually going to do one in red, which is marvelous, well, you don't want to hold back. Definitely join and become involved. And of course, don't forget our amazing things too in our shop. Are absolutely superb and wonderful magic mugs. I'm at the moment going through a phase of drinking Earl Grey tea. That's the tea I have there. But these are the best mugs ever in the world, in the universe. They are the perfect tea and coffee mugs. I say that as the worldwide expert on the subject, who's owned heaps of mugs in his time. No cracks, splinters, chips, no discoloration, despite my having my mugs for well over a year now. And also not just our mugs, we also have our amazing shirts, like the polo shirt I'm wearing now. Incredibly stylish, amazingly comfortable, 100% cotton, easy to iron, perfectly hard wearing. And we don't just have polo shirts, we have t-shirts, long-sleeved and short-sleeved, v-neck shirts, all of the same quality. And we have hats, hoodies and stickers. And we have ebooks on subjects like Russiagate, Ukrainegate, Brexit, Epstein, and we've got more ebooks coming. So come to the Duran, come to our shop, support us, own these great things, participate in this marvelous project with our friends at Patriotic Legacy. Don't hold back. What are you waiting for? Come and join.
You'll find the links to everything, the Duran Shop and the Patriotic Legacy information as well, in the description box down below. Alexander McCurse, thank you very much. Till next time, everybody, take care.